Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, November 12, 2015. Juba is about to host an IGAD summit to make sure implementation of the peace deal are on track. And peace activists with an international group say what South Sudan needs is ethical leaders for different communities to trash out each other. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's government says it will host heads of state summit for regional bloc IGAD in Juba next week to boost efforts to implement the signed peace deal. During the summit, officials plan to integrate the Office of the Joint Evaluation and Monitoring Commission, or JEMC. At the same time, the government is asking IGAD Chief Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn to postpone the arrival of the SPLM-IO advance team in Juba. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Government spokesman Michael Makwe told the reporters in Juba today it will be a one-day summit.
It is heads of states and government of IGAD and the IGAD Plus. All these will come and hold their summit here, and then they inaugurate the office of GEMEC here, after which the mediators will be here with them, and that will mark the end of the work of the mediators, and now the process will be taken over by the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission.
Presidential spokesman Atene Wek Atene says the purpose of the summit is to expedite the implementation of the peace agreement signed by the leaders of the government and armed opposition in August.
The Prime Minister of Ethiopia will be accompanied by the opposition leader, Dr. Riek Machar, who is the head of the rebel movement. He's going to also come to Juba to participate in that summit.
Makwe, who also serves as the National Information and Broadcasting Minister, says arrangements for the summit are progressing well, but since the government is busy with the summit preparations, it wants the SPLM-IO advance team's arrival to be postponed. Makwe says the 500-member advance delegation from the armed opposition group was supposed to arrive on Monday.
We have not yet completed the preparatory work or the reception. So we inform them that the most appropriate time will be on the 26th, so that when they come here, they will find that we have done everything, all the necessary preparations for them, including accommodation.
Makwe adds that Juba has yet to receive a list of the members of the SPLM-IO advance team. Meanwhile, President Kiir today abruptly suspended a widely publicized planned address to the nation. Mr. Kiir was scheduled to deliver his speech to both the national and international media. After journalists waited for several hours, Atene informed them that Mr. Kiir would address the nation at a later date still to be determined.
The speech of the president to the nation that was expected today has been now postponed until further notice. It's not indefinitely, but until further notice, due to some pressing issues that has came up, which need to be incorporated into the president's speech.
Makwe offered a slightly different explanation for the cancelled speech.
The president is now engaged on very important issues, which are more important than his speech now, and this is why he decided to cancel the statement.
Comments on social media indicate many South Sudanese expected Mr. Kiir to talk about implementation of the peace agreement, the economic challenges facing citizens, including skyrocketing commodity prices and the falling value of the South Sudanese pounds. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
An international peace group in South Sudan says now that a peace deal is in place, politicians have a chance to provide better leadership. Activists with the Geneva-based Initiative of Change International say the focus in South Sudan should now be on trust building, ethical leadership, and sustainable living for all. Philip Thonaleu met with the activists who have just wrapped up an 8-day visit to South Sudan and has this report.
Mike Brown is a coordinator for the Geneva-based Initiative of Change International, or IOFC's Working Group for South Sudan. Brown says the effort to reconcile South Sudan's different ethnic communities started in mid-2013, before President Kiir appointed religious leaders to lead that work. Brown says the IOFC has supported the church-led efforts for peace and reconciliation. He says the signed peace deal should help mend broken social ties.
So much effort went into creating the agreement, but it is really only an opening. How will those who have fought each other trust each other now to build government and make things work? That's why we've come, and we want to work mainly with the churches because they are the local agency here on the ground with a long track record in trust building. But we have some programs like Leadership in Traumatized Society and Creators of Peace. So we're offering these programs.
The IOCF trained 200 peace mobilizers in Juba during May of 2013 and another 180 in Torit and Yei in 2014. He says they will help spread messages of peace to their communities.
The distinctive thing about initiatives of change is that it starts with the individual. It starts with each individual realizing they can be part of an answer. They can be part of bringing healing, forgiveness, and reconciliation in their community, in their workplace, and then in the country.
Nyonga Chuoz heads the South Sudan Australia Peace Initiative, which works with initiatives of change. He says the South Sudanese people must be told it is possible to peacefully coexist. Nyong describes a recent meeting his group held with religious leaders has fruitful.
Trust is most important thing. That initial change is hoping to help bring in how these leaders can find somehow a way to trust one another and do the work together. And we as people will continue to do our best to make sure that the voiceless and those that are suffering across the country, their cry is heard.
Catherine Gore, a member of the South Sudan Australia Peace Initiative, says women must be allowed to play a prominent role in bringing about lasting peace. She says her group has created peace cycles for young women and mothers.
We create a space that is confidential and safe so that women feel that they are able to share, but there is no pressure. So in that space, when there is safety and connection with other women, we often find that, yes, people will want to share something that has been hurting them.
Gore says women will network in towns and villages through community meetings, churches and marketplaces to spread the message of peace. The initiatives of change operates in six other countries, including Kenya, Syria, Afghanistan and Zimbabwe. For VOA News, I'm Clifton Aleu in Juba.
We now go to Sudan, where several Sudanese opposition leaders were prevented from traveling to France and their passports confiscated. The Secretary General of the Opposition Alliance of National Forces said Sudan's National Intelligence and Security Services prevented the Secretary of the Sudanese Communist Party and the Chairman of the Unified National Unionist Party from traveling to Paris to participate in a meeting to discuss the agenda for dialogue preparatory meeting, which is scheduled to be held in November 18 in Addis Ababa under the auspices of the African Union. But Sudan's Information Minister, Ahmed Bilal, tells VOA's James Batty the travel ban decision was made by others.
In fact, actually, it's not the government, but this is actually a resolution from the internal committee for the dialogue, the 7+7, the higher committee for the dialogue. We decided that 85 or 90% of the Sudanese are rejecting any sort of negotiations or dialogue outside the country. We have outside only armed opposition, which are the rebels. We recognize this. We signed with them a document in Addis Ababa last year, plus Sadiq al-Mahdi, the Ummah leader party. This is also because he signed this document with them. Otherwise, for all others who are inside Sudan, there is no actually any point of view that they can go outside. They can join here inside. Part of them, they are actually part of the roadmap which we have signed and which is leading now the dialogue. So we know that the Communist Party, this Mohammed al-Khatib, you are talking about, if he goes outside or inside, he will not join. But he is going outside actually to make more disturbance and to make those they shouldn't come here in Sudan.
But, Mr. Minister, I mean, if your government is promoting the idea of national dialogue, don't you think respectful people, people like the opposition leader, should be allowed to travel where they want to go? That is in your country's interest.
No. Actually, for this reason, that is only. They say that they want to make rallies outside their quarter. They want to make the freedom and expression and movement inside. Everything now, what we have seen, example fulfilled. Nobody is objecting that, and they hold actually more than 3-4 meetings gathering outside their borders, and they say what they like. The question is that why they are going outside? We will not at all agree for this. The dialogue should be transferred outside Sudan. That's why.
So what does that do to the national dialogue now?
Nothing. Actually, I tell you, the majority of Sudanese are now joining the dialogue. The Communist Party is a very small party with no significance. And now they have also some problems, and some members of them, they are actually out of the party. Some other very small parties are actually making this pass. Part of them are bash parties which are belonging to Iraq or belonging to Syria, and they have no significance. The majority of the Sudanese parties are now joining the dialogue.
That's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal speaking to VOA's James Batty from Khartoum. Still in Sudan, Sudanese government officials and rebel leaders are resuming negotiations to implement a ceasefire in Darfur, southern Kordofan, and Blue Nile states. The African Union has announced that it will host talks between the Sudanese government and the SPLM North next Wednesday and Thursday in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Ian Bior has more.
Yasser Armin, the head of the SPLMN, says he's cautiously optimistic that this new round of talks will end years of fighting between rebels and government forces. Sudan's Minister of Information, Ahmed Bilal, says his government is willing to compromise with rebels in order to reach an agreement on cessation of hostilities in the disputed areas.
And the president said that if they want to make the ceasefire permanent, we are going for that, no problem.
SPLMN, one of Sudan's rebel groups, has been vocal about their strong disapproval of the Sudanese government's decision to heavily militarize civilian-populated areas where rebel groups are known to operate in Sudan, while at the same time preaching a message of peace. But Bilal insists the government has gone out of its way to ensure that the negotiations proceed. For example, earlier this year, the government agreed to a 2-month ceasefire, and Bilal says they are willing to do more, but says the rebels must also show their willingness to compromise.
The national dialogue now, there is the differences between us and the understanding of the opposition is that they want to transfer it to our side, and they want to make new agenda. For us, the agenda agreed upon is the roadmap which we have the 7+7 committee, the higher committee have agreed about. And what we call it, this Ababa document, which had been signed by the opposition last year.
The 7+7 committee Bilal refers to as Sudan's National Dialogue Committee, which is comprised of government and opposition parties. The Addis Ababa deal, signed in September last year, was one of a handful of negotiations aimed at ending the violence in Sudan. Bilal says the other important document is the Doha Agreement, which was finalized in May of 2011. The Doha deal was aimed at ushering in peace in Darfur. The Addis Ababa agreement dealt with both areas. Bilal says ending the deadly violence in Darfur is the priority.
We need to first of all, to finish with the concern of Darfurian rebels about the Darfur, with the reference to Doha agreement.
Southern Kordofan and Blue Nile states have been embroiled in conflict since 2011, when fighting broke out between the SPLMN and the Sudanese army. The SPLMN has been fighting for democratic elections and representation in Sudan's government. President Omar al-Bashir has been in power for more than 25 years. Yasser Arman is expected to head the SPLMN delegation during next week's negotiations in Addis. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. Coming up, we look at the mother-child health. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Are you happy with how religion is practiced in your community?
Yeah, I'm so happy about it. There's freedom in each and every religion. No one is judging you. You're doing whatever you want. Yeah, I'm happy with it.
I'm not really so happy of how religion is being practiced in the community. If you move around, you find that people have taken religion as a source of getting money. Someone opening his own church and his main aim is benefiting from the church instead of praising and worshipping God.
These days, mostly youths, we are not taking religion seriously. Few of us take religion seriously. So sometimes it's not good. Like our parents cannot force us to go and practice our religion. So it is something which I'm seeing not good.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The World Bank and the UN groups reports that the maternal death rates have fallen by 44% since 1990. While this is a significant progress, many mothers are still dying from preventable causes, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. Lisa Schlein reports in Geneva.
UN agencies tracking global rates of maternal mortality found that over the past 25 years, the risk of a woman dying from pregnancy-related causes has been cut nearly in half. But a new report on global mortality rates among maternal women suggests very mixed and uneven results. It shows the Millennium Development Goal of reducing maternal deaths by 75% by the end of this year has only been achieved by 9 countries. Only 2 African countries, Cape Verde and Rwanda, are among them. Lale Say is coordinator for reproductive health and research at the World Health Organization. She says maternal deaths worldwide in 1990 stood at 532,000. She says that number dropped to an estimated 303,000 in 2015.
For every 100,000 live births, there will be 216 women around the world who will die during 2015. This would mean that in 2015, around 830 women are dying from pregnancy-related causes every day around the globe.
Say notes that about 99% of all maternal deaths are taking place in developing regions, with sub-Saharan Africa alone accounting for 2 in 3 deaths. While that number is clearly far too high, she says it nonetheless represents a major improvement from the past. She says maternal mortality rates in sub-Saharan Africa have decreased by 45% from 987 to 546 per 100,000 live births between 1990 and 2015. She says Eastern Asia has made the greatest improvement, reducing maternal deaths by 72% over the past 25 years.
We know why mothers die. They die from severe bleeding, from infections, complications from unsafe abortion, and hypertensive disorders of pregnancy. And we also know that most of these deaths are preventable.
UN health officials say improving access to quality health care with trained health workers on hand during and after childbirth can save many lives. They say women and girls must be provided with contraception, safe abortions, and essential medicines to treat problems that may arise. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The once expensive and vital Lake Chad has lost as much as 90% of its water in the past 50 years. Experts from the 6 member states of the Lake Chad Basin Commission met in Cameroon to put together a plan to save the lake that will be presented at the Paris Climate Change Summit in December. Muki Edwin Kinzeka has the story from Yaoundé.
The proposal from regional experts meeting in Yaoundé this week is to transfer water from the majestic 3.7 million square kilometer Congo River Basin to the vanishing Lake Chad River Basin. The Congo River Basin is the second largest in the world after the Amazon River. Experts say that could improve the lives of over 40 million people in the countries that surround Lake Chad: Chad, Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Nigeria, Niger and Libya. Swaibu Mohammed, environmental expert at the Lake Chad Basin Commission,
urges world leaders meeting in Paris to take the proposal seriously. He says the neighboring Congo River Basin has enough water to help.
Le lac Tchad faisait 25 000 km² au cours des années 1960. En 1960, la population.
He says Lake Tchad's surface area has reduced by 90% from 25,000 square kilometers in 1960. But he says the population depending on the lake for their livelihoods has increased from 3.5 million to over 40 million inhabitants. He says that is not including the animals, plants and birds that also exert pressure on the disappearing lake. For the water transfer project to go forward, the governments of the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Central African Republic, and the Republic of Congo must allow the Lake Chad Basin Commission to use their territories and water resources. The experts say they await the green light in Paris. The project would cost $14.5 billion. No funding is currently available. Deepening poverty around Lake Chad is also linked to regional insecurity, in particular the cross-border expansion of militant Nigerian sect Boko Haram. Manna Bubakari, representative of the executive secretary of the Lake Chad Basin Commission, says the commission also plans to canvass donors for $80 million to create jobs for youths.
Les jeunes de ce bassin et particulièrement autour de ce lac Tchad, c'est des jeunes qui sont.
Bubakari says young people in the Lake Tchad basin are joining the Boko Haram terrorist group because of lack of jobs and difficult economic conditions resulting from the drying up of the lake and the extinction of its resources that should have created livelihoods for them. The drying up of Lake Chad has been attributed to changing weather patterns and human activity. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Cecil the lion may no longer be with us, but his death in a controversial hunting episode in Zimbabwe has brought attention to the issue of trophy hunting. Now, more than 4 months after Cecil's death at the hands of an American hunter, VOA's Anita Paul looks at how the hunting debate has changed.
Call it the Cecil effect. The killing of the black-maned Zimbabwean lion by an American dentist in July has reverberated beyond southern Africa and sparked a heated debate on what role trophy hunting should play in the region. And in a rare point of agreement, both sides of this debate agree that the lion's death has brought about positive change and greater awareness of trophy hunting, whether you agree with it or not. Zimbabwe Professional Hunters and Guides Association Chairman Louis Muller says the highly publicized death of Cecil inspired his organization to take a hard look at itself and to try to do things better.
The Cecil effect has affected everybody, not just Zimbabwe. It has affected trophy hunting as a whole in the entire globe. I think we realize that we've got to be more transparent as an industry. I think we've got to clean up the act and be more self-regulatory so that where there are rogue elements within our industry, we've got to address them and be very serious with these individuals before the authorities step in. We've got to clean up our act before the politicians step in, because then there'll generally be a knee-jerk reaction.
Hunting advocates argue trophy hunting is a good way to cull herds and preserve fragile environments. Muller also says the income from trophy hunting helps children by bringing income and investment to rural communities. An official with the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, Isabel Wenzel, says her group is totally against trophy hunting. She calls it a blood sport. But she says Cecil's death has opened the door for positive change.
It's caused a huge outcry, but it has forced a few governments to actually sit up and notice that there's something maybe needs to be done, that there must be a reason why that it's caused such an outcry. So there has been different steps in the direction of legislation. Even in our country, there's definitely been a better look at it. And of course, America is trying to bring in other laws. So yes, so it has caused quite a ripple effect.
This debate has come too late for Cecil. But as humans argue about what happened and how he has changed the game, the beloved lion, in a way, lives on. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. South Sudan's government says it will host a heads of state summit for regional bloc IGAD countries in Juba next week to boost efforts to implement the signed peace deal. During that summit, officials plan to inaugurate the Office of Joint Evaluation and Monitoring Commission, or JEMC. At the same time, the government is asking the IGAD chief, Ethiopia's prime minister, to postpone the arrival date of an SPLM-IO advance team in Juba. Government spokesman Michael McQuay told reporters in Juba it will be a one-day summit. He said its heads of state of IGAD and IGAD Plus will hold their summit here, then inaugurate the office of the JEMC, and the mediators will be with them. And that will mark the end of the work of the mediators, and then the process will be taken over by the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission. An international peace group in South Sudan says now that a peace deal is in place, politicians have a chance to provide better leadership. Activists with the Geneva-based Initiatives of Change International say the focus in South Sudan should now be on trust building, ethical leadership, and sustainable living for all. Mike Brown is coordinator for the Geneva-based group and the working group for South Sudan. He says their efforts to reconcile South Sudan's different ethnic communities started in mid-2013, before President Kiir appointed religious leaders to lead that work. And finally, Sudanese government officials and rebel leaders are resuming negotiations to implement a ceasefire in Darfur, southern Kordofan, and Blue Nile states. The African Union has announced that it will host talks between the Sudanese government and the SPLM North next Wednesday and Thursday in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Thursday, and we'll leave you now with the song No More War by Ras Corby.
Well, just checking up the global scene all over the world right now, seeing Rasta cities. We need a global love, you know, and a global solution. And must be a conclusion. Joe! Rastafari, just stop the war. No more war in Africa. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East. The people are fighting the peace. No more war in America. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia. We gotta keep it nice and neat, y'all. Our people suffering around the world today. They're trying to find a solution. We look around and nowhere to hide. Not even a single place to run. How can you say you're leading the world with that love? So how can you say you're leading the world without peace? Circumstances meet people along the way. They need someone to turn to. Only Jah has the solution. No mankind has it on his own.
We've been listening to Ras Corby with the song No More War. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Tell me what the mystical vibration you see in your heart. No more war in Africa. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East. The people are fighting the peace. No more war in America. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia. We gotta keep it nice and neat. Can't you tell me how much love you have for this world? Take a look at the children found in the street. They're standing as the future generation. Don't leave them on their own. Cause who's gonna be in the future? Stand up. Don't let them hold you. Stand up. Rise about yourself. Stand up. Give them love. Stand up for the future generation. Ah.